Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast. And joining me and co-host Stephen Kerr is,
Who's that guy?
It's a familiar face. Sports Radio 610, Sean Bajani, back in the saddle for a cameo. Good to see you, brother.
Good to see you guys, man. How y'all been?
Doing great. It's been exciting the last week or so around here.
Sure has, man. Exciting in a number of ways, and we got to get into that. I also want to remind everybody to listen to you and Patrick Creighton weeknights on your show, Area 45. I've got questions about the new show later on. But first, got tons of Texans. Huge week for the boys on Kirby. We'll start with a major trade, Sean. The Texans trade out of the first round. They give up their first for the Vikings second this year and next year. Plus, the Texans move up 44 spots from the seventh to the sixth round. What did you think about the deal?
Well, it was the sequencing of it that, you know, I think bothered me, because that was one of the last shoes to drop after, you know, they swung and missed on Saquon Barkley, swung and missed on trading for Arik Armstead. So it was a little frustrating in that regard. But look, I don't hate it if, in fact, it's true what some are saying regarding, you know, there not being a ton of actual first round talent to go in the first round. So from that standpoint of view, if it's a strategic move by Nick Caserio and the Texans, you know, I guess I'll wait and see like everybody else. But I also kind of don't think it's fair to even make that assumption yet, because it's so early. I mean, we're a month plus out from the draft in and of itself. So whether or not they can talk themselves into a guy or guys being first round grades, maybe an opportunity to move back up. I think in that regard, this move just gives them added resources. It gives them flexibility to be able to continue to look at things in a fluid manner and make some determinations. All these cost-cutting moves that they did in trading Malik Collins to save money, reworking Shaq Mason's deal to save money, trading out of the first round to save money. I still think they've got a couple of guys as it exists on the current roster in which they could be cap casualty cuts to save money. All leads to something much bigger coming down the road rather than just simply trading back because you don't think the value is really there in the first round.
Yeah, Sean, my thinking on this is, you know, it's not like last year when they had, what, the 12th pick? And then they traded up, you know, so that they could get both C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson. You know, you're talking about the number 42 pick, and then, you know, you might be able to trade back late in the first round, but I certainly don't see it any earlier than that. So that's why, you know, to me, the move actually made sense, because you can still get there. There are a good deep core of wide receivers that you could get in the second round, a good number of cornerbacks that you could pick up in the second round. And as you mentioned, It is a cost-cutting measure, because you don't have that high first-round pick to have to worry about. So, I don't know. You know, to me, at first, it kind of took me a little off guard. But the more I think about it, the more it just makes sense for those reasons.
And, Sean, for what it's worth, the last time the Texans had two second-round picks, they took Petrie and Mechie, which are not looking great. So keep that in mind. Got to hope Caserio does better. But it's also worth noting, when I listened to Caserio on 610 Monday, free plug, he sounded like moving back up in the draft was very possible. But if he doesn't, I checked the draft slotting on moving down from 23 to 42. It's about $6 million less in salary, Sean, which would give the Texans more money to play with this year, I would assume.
Yeah, look, depending on what site you look at, if it's over the cap, if it's Spotrac, whatever, they still have in and around $19 million left to play with in salary cap space. And again, there's other ways in which they could save some money. You know, they haven't really addressed the wide receiver core in terms of change. They brought Noah Brown back. They're planning, obviously, on, you know, Tank Dell coming back, being healthy. Guys like John Mechie, who you just mentioned, Xavier Hutchinson taking the next step. They brought Dalton Schultz back. I'll include him in the receiver category for the sake of argument, which I thought was a really big deal. But, you know, look, if they determine that, you know what, we're in a position to where we can upgrade a receiver in the draft, if we can move up here or even stay put, Robert Woods is a guy that I think is a cap casualty candidate. If you cut him, the Texans could save $5 million. They don't have a lot of guys. In fact, maybe just a handful of guys they could actually cut in effort to save some money, where you're basically, as it stands right now, where you're drafting with a couple of twos and a three, a couple of fours, no five, a six, and a couple of sevens. You're trading, you know, these million-dollar-plus players that are eating spots up on your roster right now for paying rookies. So you could look at it as like an even swap. You know, somebody else that they could cut is like an Andrew Beck. Like, he's literally the second guy that would save you the most money. But why would you do that? Because this offense literally needs a fullback, and I don't know that they're willing to put all their eggs in the basket of one Troy Hairston Jr. yet.
Yeah, and one thing that Steven mentioned is wide receiver and cornerback. This is an incredibly deep draft in those two positions, Sean. And, you know, that seems like the logical thing. It's a great reason to be able to trade back in the second round, because, you know, they really filled a lot of the positions besides this. So they set themselves up pretty well, assuming they stand pat. Any guess from you, Sean, on what three positions the Texans will take with their top three draft picks?
I know what I'd like them to address, and it's what they have tried to address already in free agency. And in two regards, they, you know, swung and missed on. I don't necessarily think that we can look at these players' track records and say they're an upgrade over guys like Sheldon Rankins and Malik Collins. When you look at a guy like Mario Edwards, who they just signed over the course of the last 24 hours, when you look at Foley Fatakasi, a defensive tackle that they brought in that I like, and he's proven to be a starting level player in this league, but I wouldn't necessarily say he's an upgrade over Malik Collins or even Sheldon Rankins at this point. So I think defensive tackle is an area and probably a top two, certainly a top three area of concern for the Texans that they need to address in the draft if they don't do so by means of a trade in free agency before the draft. I think that's one. I think, you know, number two and maybe 2A is the cornerback position along with safety. And I say that because, look, as it stands right now, Steven Nelson's not a Houston Texan.
Yeah.
I know they brought in Jeff Okuda, who has been a starter in this league before. But, you know, look, the Detroit Lions moved on from him for a reason. He was benched by the Atlanta Falcons last regular season for another young up-and-coming rookie cornerback.
I look at him as more of a depth piece.
Yeah, and he might very well be a depth piece, but he has started 24 games, you know, combined the last couple of years. I think they still need to address that even from a depth perspective. And then, look, safety. I don't trust Jimmy Ward to be a starter in this league anymore. He's missed too many games the last couple of years of his career, and really that's kind of been a track record of his in his NFL career. Good player when he's healthy and on the field. It's just so few and far between. I feel like you need a younger, more durable, reliable impact player in the secondary that you could start alongside Jalen Petrie, who I think is going to have a really big third year in the league.
Yeah, you hit on a couple of things that I want to get back to in a second, but just want to remind everybody we have an important addition to our HST channel. In the last week, I've added YouTube Shorts. If you need some one-minute adrenaline hits of our best stuff, go look for it. Over 30 shorts so far, more coming. All right, Sean, a couple questions on the offseason moves to date. Who is the most underrated Texans free agent signing or pickup in your mind?
I think you have to probably give one to Jeff Okuda. You know, to me, he's a candidate for that question, most underrated free agent signing, because look, he's a former, you know, number three overall pick because of the good size, because of the skill set, the potential that exists there. He's young. He's still only 25 years old, and he's, you know, playing a position of absolute need by the Houston Texans right now. Again, on paper, it's not an upgrade over Steven Nelson. It's not a comparable level of talent to what we've seen from the back half of this past season from Derek Stingley, who was playing at an all-pro level. However, there's potential there. It's reasonable to project that this guy could get to a Steven Nelson kind of level at his peak, maybe, just given the track record, the road that he's had, you know, through the first handful of years in the league so far. So I think he's one. I have to go with Foley Fatakasi, too, as another candidate for the most underrated signing in my mind, because, again, of the premium of position that he plays in the interior of the defensive line. D'Amico Ryans didn't say it just once. He didn't say it twice. I mean, Nick Caserio echoed it multiple times this offseason, guys. The importance of building up front and then moving back. It all starts on that defensive front, not just the four down linemen, but the front seven. And Fatakasi could play a pivotal role in that with a guy like Mario Edwards, maybe D'Amico Autry, who can play both inside and outside. Some of the depth the Texans already have there and Kurt Heinisch. But Fatakasi is probably one for me because of the position, because he knows the AFC South. He spent the last 2 years with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I think that is enough for me to say that, you know what, in D'Amico we trust. This is another guy who's played, you know, as a starter before. Maybe D'Amico sees something in him and he could play a pivotal role on the interior for the Texans going forward.
What about Danielle Hunter?
Danielle Hunter on the edge? I mean, I don't think there's anything underrated about that. I think the guy was a badass before and needed an upgrade because you lost Jonathan Grenard. Going out and making that big splash with Danielle Hunter, you're paying him $48 million guaranteed. You got to give the money to somebody. And I couldn't really think of a better guy to give it to in the open market because he was probably a top one, two, three at worst in terms of pass rushers available on the free agent market this offseason.
Yeah, he was my favorite as far as the defensive line side of things. I was real excited to get him.
Yeah, and I didn't ask, and I wasn't planning to ask Sean his favorite signing because it's got to be everybody's. He took a hometown discount. he's one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. It's like, that's a gimme that you would love that signing. What's your least favorite Texans move or pickup, Sean?
In terms of the positions, aside from defensive tackle that they addressed in free agency, I think they've upgraded. And that's, you know, with the edge, with running back, keeping rather, you know, Dalton Schultz. I think that was an important move to me. That should have been priority number one, along with trying to keep Jonathan Grenard and not taking a step back there. But I think it's a two-part answer. You know, no one individual I can say is my least favorite, because I like all of these guys for one reason or another. But the fact that they just didn't address moving on from Malik Collins in a bigger way is what I didn't like. It's my least favorite. I just didn't like the sequence of events. It still makes no sense to me. I don't care if you saved money. How the hell you even swung a deal for Malik Collins, who was already under contract, who was one of your better defensive players on that line, and you only get a seventh-round pick for him?
Yeah, that shocked me.
You didn't want Joe Mixon, and you got a seventh-round. You had to give up a seventh-round for him. So for somebody that you needed last year, that you fielded offers from last year, and you said, no, he's too important. We need him. He can be an impact guy. You want to give him up for a seventh-round pick, and you don't even get the guy that you wanted, who you wanted to pick swap him for anyway, and Eric Armstead, it didn't sit well with me. It actually made me a little bit angry. I might even still be a little bit angry, if you can't tell about that situation, but that in and of itself is not addressing that in a bigger way. And then, look, you swung and missed on Keenan Allen. It's clear the Texans wanted to upgrade and improve the wide receiver core. Keenan Allen was the third player in which you literally swung and struck out and missed on in this free agency period. So now, unless you're going to go overspend for a Mike Williams, or you're going to gamble with a roll of the dice on somebody like, you know, Hunter Renfro or people in that category, which, you know, he and Mike Williams are not even in the same zip code in terms of receiver. But if they address it in a middle market way in free agency and not the draft, I think they're doing it wrong.
I wanted to get back to Mixon, because Robert and I tossed this around, you know, kind of back and forth. Obviously, his skill set is still there. You know, he's been over 1,000 yards the last few years. You know, one of the things that Robert was concerned about is some of the personal things that have happened with him off the field. Now, you know, he's been a Bengals captain and all that, but how concerned are you about that, especially since they locked him up with a new 3-year deal after they got him in the trade?
And before, Sean, you get there, it's not just the off-the-field stuff that I'm concerned about. I looked at some of the numbers last year. He definitely had a drop off. He's not breaking tackles like he used to. There's some stuff there that, you know, of a guy that's 7 years in as a running back, this will be his eighth season. You don't mind it from an on-the-field standpoint if you just gave up the seventh round pick and his contract isn't crazy, but I just didn't understand why you had to give him $13 million guaranteed.
The extension was kind of curious, because you're right. The Texans didn't have to do that at all. At all. I want to attack that on the back half, because I do love the conversation of the off the field stuff. I think it's important. I think you need to address it. That's the first thing that I brought up on my show after this signing, before the extension, because look, it's still the elephant in the room, even though it's 10 years ago. There's a couple of recent little nuggets that occurred last year, you know, in which his name was involved in, his property was involved in. And I know, you know, in one of the allegations that he was accused of, went to trial, he was acquitted of last year. Another one, I still think it might be ongoing, involving his sister with a gun and a kid being injured on his property. Yeah. I don't know if that's ever really been resolved yet, but even if it hasn't, it doesn't sound like that, you know, he's really going to be at any sort of fault there in a minimal way. Like, it's his property. Okay, so how liable is he going to be? But you know, you going back to something that occurred 10 years ago when he was a 17-18-year-old kid, 17, 18, 7 or 8, 27 or 28, 48 or 58, doesn't matter. It's just one thing you don't do. You don't hit a woman. I think we all agree with that. But
if it's one thing, people have jumped on me. It's like, well, can't you forgive? I get a lot of that stuff because I brought it up last week. I mentioned it on Twitter. Yeah, I can forgive, except this guy just happens to keep falling into trouble, like you just mentioned, Sean.
Yeah.
But you could say he keeps falling into trouble, but, you know, there was a really large gap there where he wasn't, where he kept his nose clean. He concentrated on becoming a better person. It obviously seems concentrated on football, flourished at football in a really good spot, was a part of a team that went from, you know, the bottom, you know, to the top with Joe Burrow as his quarterback, was around some really good people there. And that brings me to my last point on Joe Mixon regarding the off the field stuff. You know, this is a move that, you know, doesn't happen if Bob McNair is alive and running this.
We talked about that. I believe, Robert, we mentioned that, I think.
Yeah, and you think back to the way that not just people and fans and media spoke about this team, but quite literally what we saw happen every single offseason with the construction and reconstruction of the roster. I mean, they wanted a bunch of dudes like Owen Daniels, a bunch of dudes like Kevin Walter, a bunch of dudes like Eric Winston or a Chris Myers. You're really good guys, and, you know, dang it, they try really hard and they're really good players, but they ain't got no dog. And it got to a point where people got sick and tired of 9-7 AFC South champions, Brian, kind of a thing, where, you know what, you need dogs. You need real badass dudes. And
like J.J. Watt, he's a troublemaker, isn't he?
Hey, you know what? That's an anomaly.
The exception to the rule.
That's an anomaly. A heck of a guy, but, you know.
C.J. Stroud's got some dog in him. Tank Dell's got some dog in him. I don't care. You get in trouble, don't make you a dog.
No. But, you know, here's the thing. It's Joe Mixon plays the game like a dog. You know, he will run through you. Going back and watching film of him just this past last season, I mean, he ended Dre Greenlaw on a run in between the tackles, lowered his shoulder and put Greenlaw on his butt. You know, and that's what Joe Mixon is if he's going to run between the tackles. Joe Mixon, if he's going to go outside zone, which I think the Texans envision him doing obviously quite a lot in this zone blocking scheme, you know, he can still stick his right foot in the ground, turn it up and go, stick his left foot in the ground, turn it up and go, and make guys miss, in my opinion. Obviously, he's a threat as a pass catcher out of the backfield too. But while this is not a move that the Texans organization would have made a decade ago, the fact that you make it now, why do you make it now? Well, the culture is completely what you tried to get it to be, you know, for years under Bob McNair, under Gary Kubiak, under all of these coaches and players that you brought in, you thought were really swell guys. Well, the culture is great, but if you ever were going to put a guy like Joe Mixon, if you had a shred of concern about him and his personality traits into a locker room, I could think of a heck of a lot worse situations than putting him next to a guy like C.J. Stroud, Tank Dell, Will Anderson, people that have literally had that culture, that focus of off the field, you know, what's important, the religious aspect, just rub off on him and seep through and speak about it and just emanate what they believe in, their faith, and what's really important. Joe Mixon's going to fit really well into this locker room, I think, because of all of that, and their head coach believes and emits the same darn thing.
What position or position group are you most worried about right now?
That's a tough one, and I guess you got to go with the one that's been least addressed in terms of upgrades, probably the secondary, because you don't have a legitimate starting corner opposite Derek Stingley. You've got a banged up old starting safety and Jimmy Ward and no real answer behind him. Oddly enough, it's the first thing that the Texans attacked, you know, the weekend before the legal tampering period began. You know, they brought a lot of their depth guys back, you know, an Eric Murray, a Chris Boyd, Lonnie Johnson, who's more of a special teamer, but they ain't dudes, you know. I think for that reason, I'm a little bit worried about the secondary. You know, don't worry about the secondary because you got better with the pass rush. You know, you got Danico Autry in the mix. You got Azeez Al-Shaair at linebacker, who's going to be a beast. You got Danielle Hunter, and you've got some good rotational players on the interior. The pass rush, no, I don't care. I don't care. You need dudes in the secondary. I think that's as important as anything else. So that's probably my biggest concern. And I still think, you know, look, I knew the writing was on the wall. You weren't going to get Denzel Perryman back, especially after the Texans signed Azeez Al-Shaair, which I think is a huge upgrade over what they had even in Blake Cashman last year. Played terrific football. He's just not proven to play like that, and he's not proven durability-wise. I hope he earns every last penny of that three-year, $25 million deal he got from the Vikings. But I still think you need another dude, another good rotational piece in at linebacker before I feel pretty good and solid about the front seven.
Speaking to that, are there any free agents that you're eyeing out there?
I really had my eye on three guys for the interior because they were starting caliber players. My favorite one was Sebastian Joseph Day, who's a former San Francisco 49er. He just got signed by somebody yesterday, I think, early this morning on a one-year contract, and I can't remember where. He might have gone with the LA Chargers. I can't recall. But I really liked him because I thought he was a good system fit, not just because he's a former 49er. I mean, that really didn't mean a hill of beans because he played with the 49ers last year when D'Amico wasn't there, and he was playing presumably a lot out of position because, well, they didn't like how their defensive coordinator that replaced D'Amico was playing their guys, hence why they fire him. I feel like anything the Texans do that's going to make us go, ooh, ah, yes, is going to come via the draft.
You referenced it earlier. What did you think of the near Keenan Allen trade?
You know, it's funny. I wasn't even really thinking about a guy like Keenan Allen, but when you had the opportunity to go get a proven, productive, just a guy that can still run crisp routes, run any route on the route tree, somebody that still is able to gain separation, could be an absolute game changer for C.J. Stroud in that regard and an upgrade over anybody currently on this receiver core with the complement of Nico and Tank to play alongside and Dalton Schultz to boot. I mean, that would have been great. I wasn't thinking of him. And then, hey, all of a sudden the Texans are in on this dude and you miss on him. It's disturbing because we don't know what they missed on him for. You know, I think the only numbers that we've heard that are pretty hard and solid are what you offered Saquon Barkley, what you offered Sheldon Rankins. Aside from that, just knowing that they were in and they didn't get him, that's the swing and miss, but I'd like to know for how much. If it turned out to be like you whiffed on him, like the Astros whiffed on Blake Snell for $4 million, you miss out on getting that dude, then that would kind of bother me, I think.
You mentioned this earlier. The Texans just added 30-year-old journeyman defensive tackle Mario Edwards Jr. Maybe just a depth guy, but his PFF grade last year was 68. Edwards, 33 starts over 9 years. So, you know, not many starts. The Seahawks last year, he had 2 sacks, 5 TFLs, 6 QB hits, 21 tackles, and a forced fumble. Sean, this brings up an interesting question. Who is your starting defensive tackles? Fotokasi and who? I guess you got Settle, Edwards. You got a number of candidates there.
Depends on kind of like what you want to do. If it's a passing down, I think, Fadakasi's probably, you could pencil in him in there right now. I like Danico Autry because he does play again outside, inside. I know a lot of his productivity has come on the edge, career high in sacks last season with 11.5, but the guy's an absolute beast. I do get excited when I think about Danico Autry and Fadakasi and Azeez Al-Shaair on the field in passing down situations. The dynamic that that presents up the middle and in coverage and in the pass rush on the edge with Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson. I mean, that's pretty awesome. I'd say that's an upgrade if you think about it in that regard. But I don't think the Texans have another starting defensive tackle alongside Fadakasi right now. As it stands, I know guys they brought in. You mentioned Tim Settle, Mario Edwards. Edwards is the epitome of a rotational player who, when used correctly, and he's bounced around between, you know, the Raiders, the Saints, the Bears, the Titans, and I think the Seahawks he played with last year. He's been used the same way throughout his career, with exception maybe the first couple of seasons in the NFL. And he could be a starting level guy. He produced no matter where he's been, no matter what role he's been in. And that's the caveat is, you know, Malik Collins wasn't really Malik Collins until D'Amico Ryans got his hands on him. You know, he was kind of like an okay guy and became a really solid, durable dude up the middle for the Texans the last couple of years. And then you couple him with Sheldon Rankins, and I really think they both complemented each other well. Maybe D'Amico sees the same thing in a combination between Tim Settle and Fadakasi, people that haven't really just reached their potential yet. Maybe Mario Edwards is a guy who rotates with somebody else. I think this is a huge offseason, a huge training camp for a guy like Kurt Heinisch, who flashed a little bit last year, but could very well be playing, competing for his job this training camp.
Yeah, that's a good point there. Mr. Reddit, Cal McNair, dropped a version of the new uniforms. What did you think, Sean Versace, Sean Armani? What did you think?
You know, it's funny. I didn't know it was happening. That's the second picture that I saw. That's the one that I liked. The first one, it looked like somebody was just trolling the Texans, like they'd gotten hacked or something.
Yeah.
The Derek Stingley release, because of the background, it looked like somebody went to Walmart, bought a off-the-beaten-path Texans jersey, not officially licensed by the NFL, threw it on, got a helmet, and said, I'm going to get them and say this is the new unis, and they're released. When I saw the Derek Stingley version, I was like, wow, I hope this is not it. My brother actually texted me. He goes, dude, did you see this? I hope this isn't it. And I'm like, yeah, me too. Well, it was it. But it's certainly looked a heck of a lot better on Tank Dell and Nico Collins. So I like it. The players are going to be the guys that make the uniforms look good because they're going to have the sleeves, the other complements, you know, the undershirts and the compression socks and all that stuff. So I like it. You need to have more white to make the numbers pop like that picture does. And granted, that setting is a heck of a lot different than the one from Derek Stingley or whoever was portraying Derek Stingley. It looked like they took it in the corner of a parking garage downtown or something. But I can dig them. I can't wait to see the H-Town blue version of them. I heard what they're going to look like. I just need to see with my own eyes.
Yeah, the other photo, I heard somebody say that that was taken. It might have been Sean on the morning show. I think he said it was taken where they actually took the photos at this, like, you know, they obviously dropped the background or whatever into it. But I think that was what was going on with that other photo that they had. Let me ask you this. The new show is Area 45. What's Area 45 mean? And am I not hip enough to know this? Should I know this, Sean?
Me too, actually.
You know, we just kind of thought two things. You know, a little weird, which, you know, we're kind of a little weird when you put me and Patrick Creighton together. But then two, 45. I mean, it was the first freeway in Houston.
Yeah.
It cuts the city right down the middle. Everything kind of feeds off of that. So
that's kind of what I thought.
Like Area 45, you know, we want to be that heartbeat of Houston and kind of have everything kind of spawn off of our show. In a lot of ways, we looked at it like, you know what? Being on in the evenings, we get to have the first reaction a lot of times when breaking news happens or when big news happens here locally on a Friday news dump or something like that. They generally want to put it out when nobody's out there to talk about it and poke holes and stuff. Well, we're here for that too. So I think that was kind of the mindset when we came up with the name. And then, 45, it looks cool. It's the best freeway sign in Houston. It's the most identifiable, I think. And, we're trying to rock with it.
All right, Steven, you know this question's coming. For some strange reason, I have not been on Area 45 yet. Did the invite get lost in the mail, Sean? What happened?
Man, we're in the beginning stages of our eighth week, I think, on air. So we're still trying to get our feet wet and get a lay of the land, but I think it's coming together. Hey, we'd love to have you on, man. You come on and we can chop it up, no doubt. There's obviously no shortage of topics to get into these days because 3-hour show, we're about to turn it to 4 when Astros starts because we're going to be doing a 1-hour H-Town post-game show after every Astros game. So we're looking forward to that.
Oh, nice.
Astros has certainly been a hot topic the last few weeks. You know, Blake Snell, Jordan Montgomery, Bregman and Tucker contract talks. And which, by the way, I'm still trying to figure out what the heck's going on with that. I think 5 weeks ago, we were told that there would be an offer in 4 weeks. Well, I ain't heard squat in regards to Alex Bregman on that regard. Boris seems to be having a really tough offseason, doesn't he?
Yeah, he has been. He's not the super agent that he has been in previous years. He's still getting money.
I know. Poor
just
him.
Not
he's
as much.
Getting his 5% of $80 million
yeah.
instead of $280 million.
He's still not hurting. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
All right, man. Throw up your H's. How do you feel about where the Cougs got put by the NCAA bracket geniuses?
You know, I feel like in recent years, I didn't start sweating until like the third round. And now, I mean, I'm looking at Nebraska and A&M, particularly A&M. You know, they get by Longwood. I'm like, man, that's going to be tough if it's Nebraska or in A&M because yeah. I like both of those programs. And look, they've got to get healthier. Juwan's got to be right. I think he could have played the other day, obviously, and it was a business decision, you know, from Kelvin Sampson. I'm really surprised that they went that route, to be honest with you, because I thought that if you compare this team to the last three seasons, I know they've dealt with injuries at various points in time, but not only were they battle tested, but they were playing their best basketball going into the tournament. And I can't really say that about the Cougs right now. It was a hell of a game to end your regular season against Kansas with. I mean, start to finish, that was just a dominant, complete basketball game. But that was their best game probably within the last week and a half, 2 weeks of the regular season. I haven't seen that version at any point in time in conference play.
I wanted them to lose in the tournament as quickly as possible. They have so many injuries. And then yeah. Roberts gets yeah. hurt, and you're like, oh, my goodness. Ryan Elvin's going to be your starting center if the way things are going with the whole team right now.
Yeah. You know, B. Scott, you know, actually said the same thing to me. He was like, I hope they lose. And I'm like, I never agree with that line of thinking because I think you're always trying to just put things together on the basketball court. You got to try to play your best basketball. You got to try to ride momentum. You got to continue to be battle test. You're going to be playing some of the best teams who you're going to be trying to beat in the third and fourth rounds as you make your way along in this tournament. But obviously, Kelvin Sampson and the Cougs, you know, thought about it. And they went with kind of the more your line of thinking, the business decision, wanted to get as healthy as possible going into, you know, the first round. And
look, I saw Roberts dragging around his leg in the second game of the, I was like, okay, enough. Look, let's just take the L, get out of there healthy. They've proven they won the Big 12. They yeah. were number one in net. They should have been the first seed. They were the best team in the country. AP poll, net ratings, best conference, best team in that conference. What else do you have to prove? Let's get out of there healthy and get to the tournament.
Well, here's yeah. my beef, Sean, is it seems that every year, no matter where Houston is, they like to put them on late, the late game, 8-10 on a Friday night. I don't remember the last time the Cougs played a day game, at least, you know, starting the first round of the tournament during the week.
Yeah, that's a good point. I personally don't really mind it because we got a big 55-inch TV right in front of us when we're doing the show, so I get to watch
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'd rather watch it while I'm trying to do a show versus trying to watch it when my 4-year-old wants me to play basketball because yeah. the basketball game on TV. So I got to have to go back and forth. That's kind of a challenge. He's getting into it. I'm training him. It's just taking a little bit longer than I thought it would at this point. But again, I don't mind it. Hey, you know, prime time, not prime time, less eyeballs, more. It don't matter. As long as – because if the Cougs get where they should be, again, this year in a tournament, Elite Eight, Final Four, with an opportunity to go play for the title – all eyes are going to be on them anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Just keep winning.
Yep.
Look for our Houston Sports Talk live Cougar postgame show after the Sunday second round game. We're going to skip the Longwood game. Great golf course. I had a hole-in-one there back in 2001 or two-ish or something like that. But yeah, if you're in Houston, you know what I'm talking about. Assume that they're going to get to the A&M Nebraska winner, and then we'll be there for that one. Also, if you missed it in our last show, we had insiders with the Vikings, Titans, and Bengals on Hunter, Autry, Azeez, and Mixon. Tons of good info from those guys. We haven't forgot about the Sizzling Hot Rockets. Wednesday, I've got one of our regular experts, Cooper Klein. But most importantly, we missed you, Sean. Thanks for the hang, man.
I appreciate it. Always good to chop it up with you guys.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.